Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Dread Time Stories. I'm your host, Dr. Phobia. And tonight, dear patients, it's time for a part two of a much-requested series here on the channel. So without further ado, sit back, relax, and enjoy tonight's tale. I'm a cinema usher, and we have some strange rules. My name is Sean, and I've been a cinema usher for 3 years now. My cinema has rules that you can never, ever break, no matter how strange or downright insane they sound. If you're confused, you should probably start at the beginning. Some rules are harder to follow than others, and some come up more often. Rule 4 is one of the rarer ones, and I thank God for that. Rule 4, if the lights go out when you're cleaning a room, take a seat. A movie will play. You have to watch it to the end. Do not look away from the screen, no matter what you see or hear. This is the rule that gave me the most anxiety when I read it. Already having run-ins with rules 1 and 2, I knew how serious following our commandments or failing to do so could be. My experience with rule 4 happened when I was cleaning out room 1 after a movie. Without warning, it happened. The thing I'd been dreading for months at that point. The lights went out. There was a pop, like a light bulb going off. 1 second, I was in a well-lit room. The next, I was standing in pitch blackness. I froze. Even though I'd been mentally preparing for this for weeks, I froze. Take a seat. Damn you, take a seat. Finally, my limbs obeyed my mind, and I leapt for where I hoped the nearest row was, and rammed myself down into a place, just in time. The screen lit up, filling with static, before resolving into the image of a dark, dank cellar. The image quality was ancient, like some super 8mm film from the 90s. Through the grainy screen, I could make out that there was a single chair in the center of the room. Tied to it was a young man. He was struggling against his bonds, and I could tell he was injured. Narrow streams of blood streamed down his face from an injury just above his brow, and his arms were rubbed raw from the ropes. There was something terribly familiar about the prisoner. Not his face. I had never seen him before in my life, but his clothes. I froze as I heard something move behind me. It was the creak of a cinema chair. My back crawled. Something, had sat down behind me. It took all my willpower not to swivel around, or to jump from my seat and make a break for the entrance. I fixed my eyes on the screen, praying for this to be over soon. The man on screen had stopped struggling. He was looking at something behind the camera. It took me a second to realize he had to be watching the cameraman. I almost jumped from my seat as a voice whispered behind me, "What an actor, huh?" The voice was low, practically an inaudible whisper. It sounded human, almost, but I knew immediately it was anything but. I can't explain precisely how. It was something about the cadence of the thing's speech. It was almost if the throat wasn't quite made for human language. It just did its best at mimicking what it had heard. Even worse, the voice was coming from slightly above me, not directly behind. Whatever was in that chair behind me was absolutely massive. Should I answer? Should I just keep watching? The rules had told me nothing about that. I remained silent, gripping the armrest to stop myself from shaking, eyes fixed towards the screen. The camera was moving as the person carrying it approached his prisoner. The man in the chair was trying to desperately recoil, but his binds were too tight for anything but the slightest movement. As the camera got closer, I realized why he was so horribly familiar. His clothes. He was wearing a cinema uniform. My cinema's uniform. "Where do you think they got the costumes?" whispered the thing sitting behind me. Sadistic irony dripped from every word. It was playing with me. I didn't answer. The movie went on for about a half an hour. I won't tell you exactly what I saw. I don't want to think about it any more than I have to. I'm not even sure that stuff would be allowed on this site. Not even in a description. Suffice to say, I wouldn't wish such a fate upon my worst enemy. At one point, I retched and vomited all over myself on the floor. As my stomach convulsed, I almost took my eyes off the screen. And at that moment, I felt the thing's hot, stinking breath on my back. It wanted me to look away. It wanted me to give in. I looked up again, fixing my eyes into the gruesome screen playing out. The thing behind me spoke once more, before the lights came back on as abruptly as they had turned off. It sounded frustrated, angry even. "You know the saying, Sean, rules are meant to be broken." Or at least the last guy thought so. I wish I could end the story here, but unfortunately there's a bit more to it. Because the guy on the screen had been a worker here, because he had died for breaking a rule. Because David hadn't told us everything. Because David hadn't told us everything. Instead keeping us on some sort of bullshit need-to-know basis. Someone had suffered a fate worse than death because of his secrecy, and I would have him explain himself. Still covered in my own sick and cold sweat, I stormed through the lobby, ignoring the disgusted looks of customers there. I slammed into David's office. David looked up calmly. "Rule 4 or 11? "Rule 4. "Good. 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 "You knew what the risk was. You knew what could have happened, but you didn't tell anyone. That guy I saw, the things it did to him, you could have stopped that." David sighed tiredly.
"It's better this way, Sean."
"What? How can it..."
"Let me explain something to you," David said, standing eye to eye with me. There was a hint of steel in his voice now, and a flash of suppressed anger in his look.
I shut up.
"Some things can be avoided if you know about them. Room 3 is like that. If you know what it wants and how it will try to get it, it's easier not to fall for it. But some things, Sean, some things only get stronger the more you know about them. You can avoid breaking Rule 4 with what you know now. You just need to keep watching. But the more you know about it, the more direct the thing in the room can be in its attempt to get you to look away.
And the last guy, the one I saw on screen,
he knew too much, even more than you do now. It was a mistake I will never repeat, and a lesson I will not forget. There is a threshold, Sean, and I can't allow anyone to cross it. If you know too much, no amount of willpower or strength will keep your eyes on that screen.
Rule number 5. If you encounter a room where all customers are looking directly at you and smiling, inform the manager immediately. Rule 5 is the one which has raised the most questions in my mind about this cinema and my work. My encounter with it occurred about a year and a half into my time here. Something you should know about the work of a cinema usher. We need to check that every movie is running smoothly, working with subtitles and so on. We are only obligated to do so at the beginning of each projection, but if we have some free time during our shifts, we like to check in at random to make sure everything is all right. Unfortunately, it's exactly because of this that I entered Room 5 one day, only to almost have a heart attack as I realized that every single person inside was looking me dead in the eye and eerily smiling. Taking care not to even blink, I slowly backed out of the room. The customers never broke eye contact. The second I was in the relative safety of the lobby, I ran over to David, who was talking with a customer at our small bar. "Rule 5, I said to him once I reached him. David went pale. The customer, a young, attractive woman, looked over at him with confusion.
"Excuse me," David muttered in her direction before turning to me.
"Which room?"
"5. Follow me."
We ran over to the room. Once inside, David gestured for me to remain at the bottom of the row of seats.
"Stay here."
He did not have to tell me twice. The room of customers was deadly quiet, every head silently turning to follow David as he walked in front of the screen and stopped in the middle.
"What do you want?"
he said to the room at large. Every person in the room opened their mouth in unison and said in perfect chorus,
"Hello, manager. Long time."
"Cut the crap," growled David. "I know your game. What do you want this time?"
The room laughed in chilling synchrony.
"Always so direct. That's why I always liked you. More than your predecessor, you know."
David's jaw clenched. His hands were rolled into fists. I had never seen him so angry.
"Just tell me what you want,"
he hissed through his teeth.
"Tell me what you want and let these people go."
"Ah, so impatient, so eager to get it over with,"
the crowd answered.
"I want you to open room 3 right now."
David went pale.
"No, ask something else. There are lines I will not cross. There are rules."
The things behind the eyes of the crowd laughed as one.
"Ah, yes, your precious rules. You think they could stop anything? They stop nothing, David. They only delay it."
"Giving me information for free?"
David said sarcastically.
"You've changed since the last time we talked."
"I only tell you what you already know, and my price does not change. You will open room 3 again."
For the first time, David hesitated, only for a second. But the things noticed, and they laughed at him cruelly.
"I've already told you, I won't do it. That rule is never broken,"
he said finally.
"Do you forget your history? After a mere 13 years?
The crowd sneered.
"The fate of these people is in your hands, David. You know what happens to them when my price is not paid. Do you seek to atone with this meaningless resistance for the sacrifice that was made because of your mistake?"
"I don't atone," David hissed. "And I have made no mistake."
"Would the one who you miss so dearly agree?"
"I think not," the things intoned.
There was a charged silence, and the crowd spoke again.
"The price has been paid. These people are safe."
David blinked in confusion.
What price?"
"Room 3 was never the price. The anguish of your remembrance, as well as the unanswered questions that will now plague this servant of yours, were the price."
"You bastard. You. Until we meet again, manager."
David stormed out of the room without another word. The crowd followed him with their gaze, and then fixed upon me. A smile, a nod, then the crowd looked up as one. They shed their identical behavior. A hidden tension was released. They were free.
Rule 6. If a customer hears noises in the air ducts, assure them that you will look into it.
Take one of the packages marked R6 from behind the bar. Enter the air ducts through the garbage room and place the contents of the package at least 10 meters away from the entrance. Leave the air ducts as fast as possible. This is one of the easiest rules to follow, although the time limit is worrying at first. It's also one of the most commonly employed, usually coming up about once a week. Thankfully, I've never seen anyone fail to uphold it. The first time I had to feed the thing in the air ducts was a very busy shift. We had premiered The Rise of Skywalker a few days before, and we were swamped by a crowd of customers. I was cleaning up the lobby from the ever-present spilled popcorn when an angry young man wearing a Star Wars shirt stormed over to me. "Good day, sir. How may I help?" I began.
"Yeah, man, whatever," he cut me off immediately. "Could you, like, fix your damn air conditioning, dude? There's something banging around in there near the grill in our room. I didn't pay for this kind of shit."
I clenched my teeth to control my temper at the man's manners, but managed to remain calm. "Yes, sir. Of course. Sorry for the inconvenience." "David will probably forgive you for letting a pile of people die at the hands of God knows what, but he won't let you allow to be rude to customers. He's just like that." After the customer had stalked off again, I got one of the marked packages from behind the bar. It was slightly heavy, and I could feel moisture seeping out from inside it. Doing my best to ignore it, I crossed over to the garbage room and opened the grill covering the air ducts. I could hear whatever the customer had been complaining about, a fast tip-tap, sounding like fingers drumming endlessly against the inside of the duct. My skin crawled. It was uncomfortably close to the sound of dozens of long, thin legs. I took a deep breath and crawled into the chute. The air inside was cold, and the passage was tight. I was forced to go prone, propelling myself on my elbows and knees. Crawling forward, I could see a dim light, and there was a pile of something ahead, around the 10-meter mark. As I reached it, I groaned under my breath. In the chute before me lay a pile of gnawed animal bones. With shaking fingers, I undid the wrapping on the package and dropped the whole chicken into the pile of remains. The sounds in the chute stopped, and I held my breath. Then it returned, faster, tip-tap, tip-tap, louder than before, a frantic, hungry staccato rhythm. Terror and adrenaline flooding my brain, I scooted backwards towards the mouth of the passage. How long had I been there? How long did I have left? 30 seconds? 20? The clattering of legs was mixed with the now scraping sound as something chitinous and heavy dragged itself down the corridor towards the food and toward me. And finally, my legs made contact with the end of the duct. Kicking frantically, I dropped to the floor of the garbage room and slammed the grill shut. The clattering inside had stopped. Listening carefully, I could now make out the sound of tearing flesh. And to think, this is one of the easiest rules. Well, there you have it, dear patients. Part 2 of the Cinema Usher series. I hope you enjoyed it, and thank you for listening. Like I always say in closing, check under your bed, look in your closet, and sleep with the light on. The life you save may very well be your own. Good night, everyone.